Today, months of escalating protests in Hong Kong through the eyes of one protester whose identity we are protecting. And, in opinion, The Guardian's Polly Toynbee on a Queen's speech as odd as the rest of the Brexit saga. Are you happy to start?
Yeah.
Sorry. I think so. The person you're about to hear from has been at the heart of Hong Kong's pro-democracy protests from day one. And we're going to change your voice.
Okay, perfect.
He remembers an extraordinary sight on that Sunday, June the 9th. 1 million people filling the streets. At the beginning, it was peaceful.
But now it's different. Because now everyone is very tense. Tear gas is everywhere. The police use countless of rubber bullets and sponge bullets.
Like thousands of others, he has returned to the streets, week in, week out, with a growing roar of anger in the face of an increasingly brutal crackdown. He says this is the fight of their lives, and they are not giving up.
Freedom is not free, so you have to risk a certain things to fight for what you want.
What started as a row over a piece of legislation has turned into a battle for the soul of Hong Kong, with no apparent end in sight. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in focus, 18 weeks of turmoil in Hong Kong through the eyes of one protester. What do you remember of that very first protest?
It was quite peaceful. I mean, it was very relaxed, I would say. There's no vandalism, there's no mask. I mean, gas mask, anti-smoke gas mask. There's no helmet. It wasn't as tense as the protest now.
In the beginning, the protests had a single aim: to stop a proposed new law that would allow extraditions to mainland China, with fears that the Communist Party would prosecute dissidents for political reasons. What were your expectations then?
Back then, I mean, I was expecting to have at least a formal response from the government. Like we stop the legislation of the extradition law or any kind of response in a sense, but we didn't. So the government said they would proceed with the law.
How often have you protested since?
I think I would say at least once or twice per week, because ever since the 12th of June, we have a lot of protests everywhere in Hong Kong, pretty much every day.
And when you go out to the streets, what do you do? Do you chant? Do you hold a placard? Are there particular things you say?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't. It's very clear that what we are talking about, what we are requesting. And most of the time, these protests are very peaceful. It starts off very peaceful from the beginning, but as long as the police started to jump into the scene, it ends up in chaos.
They shot tear gas and pepper spray, swung batons, and fired rubber bullets. Protesters pushed back with water bottles, protected by umbrellas and masks.
What does it feel like to be in those protests?
It's a very complex feeling because, in a sense, you want to go out to fight for what you want. But on the other hand, you were very afraid because the police are actually trying as hard as they can to crack down the protests. So they pretty much arrest everyone. Yeah, it's quite a scary activity. Back then, I would think I would have the freedom of speech or freedom of assembly. Things are very different now.
Then the riot police, led by a small contingent of British officers, moved in en masse.
When you talk about the police and the fear, are there any incidents that you can describe to me?
I saw youngsters who were got beaten. I mean, three armed policemen were on him, and they push him on the floor. I mean, they push him with their ankles and knees. They beat him with batons, and blood coming out. And they try to stop the journalists from filming and taking pictures. And we have a social worker next to him who is asking for the victim's name so that he can get some help from the lawyers or something. And the policemen are trying to stop him by just covering the mouth of the victim. And then all of a sudden, lots of policemen just came and just get him onto the bus and drove up.
Do you know where they go?
I had a friend who was arrested. He was beaten up on scene, just outside a government building in Hong Kong. But he was just standing there protesting. But he didn't do any like graffitis or setting things on fire or anything. And he was brought to the police station. The police actually stopped him from getting a lawyer for a couple of hours.
Have you been hurt?
No, luckily. But when you run, when you start running, it's difficult not to crash into anybody or maybe twist your ankle or anything like that.
Is it hard to motivate yourself to go sometimes? I mean, so much is at stake. Is it a big physical and psychological demand?
Yes, I would say so. During the office hour, people are just looking at their phones and looking for news and seeing what's happening. You have to keep updating. I mean, and in the evening, you have to go to protests and you have to wake up in the morning. It's very tiring in terms of physically and also psychologically. And so many people are being hurt. I mean, so many young people, I mean, 12, 14.
12-year-olds. Have you seen 12-year-olds on the street?
Yes, I did see. Sometimes I drove to the protests. Because we all know the public transport are not safe at the moment. So the police set up a lot of robots around Hong Kong and they search every single bus. And if they found out you have a gas mask, they would just take you in. So the Hong Kong people actually drive their private cars in order to pick up these students and to deliver them home safely. And I have been doing this for a couple of weeks and I had actually delivered a student back home. And he was only like 14. It's beautiful, but yet it's daunting, you know, because these youngsters, their summer holiday should be a thing that they can really enjoy. And now they have to go on the streets and forced to protest for their own future.
It's happy to see a lot of people.
What about when everybody goes back to school?
The protest will still goes on. In Hong Kong, we are now fighting for our freedom, and I think it's the last chance for us to fight for our freedom.
Do you think people are willing to die for the cause?
I think so. I mean, we have young protesters who has their will inside their backpack. They wrote a will. They put it in their backpack.
It sounds like there's an incredible culture of fear that has been created by the police. I mean, are you scared to tell your friends, your family that you're protesting?
Oh, my family knows about my protest, so that's fine. In terms of friends or in social media, we don't dare to post anything. Anything that they can prove that you are at the scene.
I mean, what about your colleagues in the office? Are people afraid to talk out?
Some of them are pretty scared to talk about their views because some of them just think they support the protester. The manager will not be happy because a lot of business in Hong Kong is now funded by the Chinese government or even by the Chinese businessmen. And apparently they are doing a lot of things to pressure the people who they employ not to go to the protests and support the government.
So by protesting, are people putting a lot at risk? I mean, are their jobs at risk?
Yes, I had a friend who had been fired by his employer because he had been found guilty by posting a few anti-government comments on his own Facebook, and they got him fired.
And what about facial recognition technology? Is that frightening people?
That is, actually, yes.
It might look like something out of a sci-fi movie. Laser pointers confuse and disable the facial recognition technology being used by police to track down dissidents.
That's why we are furious about the smart lamppost deploying in Hong Kong. And the protester actually tore one of them down. And we found out a lot of the components and system running inside is related to Chinese government or companies from China.
There's been widespread anger with the police at the use of tear gas, rubber bullets, pepper spray and water cannons. The world was shocked when a 14-year-old was shot in the thigh by live ammunition and an 18-year-old was fired at by an officer at point-blank range, narrowly missing his heart. But there has been aggression from protesters too.
This man has already been beaten bloody, but it's not enough for the protesters.
Some have hurled rocks, bricks and Molotov cocktails, targeted police officers and set fire to metro stations.
This was savage, cornered and alone. Mob violence, plain and simple.
We've also seen violence from protesters. Do you support that?
Well, in a nutshell, I don't. But to be honest, it's fully understandable because we have no choice.
Have you ever engaged in violence?
On objects or on people?
On either.
On either. Yes, on objects. I've been lucky that I didn't ever to need to engage with the people who act violently on protesters. You can see a lot of videos of protesters trying to beat up a person on the streets. And some of the time, the media just cut the first part of the video. They have guns and they have knives. And they were trying to hurt the protesters and they were trying just to protect themselves. And this is the only way we fight back. I mean, it's not morally correct, I would say, but there isn't any kind of way for us to file a complaint because these policemen are not wearing any identity. They don't have their ID numbers. They don't have any warrants on them. And they wear a full facial mask. On the 21st of July, we had an attack from the mobs in Yuen Long. So they attack everyone inside a train station or inside the train. And the police didn't do anything about it. So they arrived at the scene 40 minutes after the incident. And it's the same for a couple of days ago. A taxi driver actually ran into a crowd of protesters.
Run into people.
11 people were hurt.
Videos of this incident that have been widely shared online show a taxi ploughing into protesters, but others also show the driver being pulled from his car and violently beaten by some in the crowd. Has this divided Hong Kong?
I think so, yes. There is clear line between whether you support the government or you not, or you don't.
We start with breaking news from Hong Kong. The territory's leader, Carrie Lam, has formally withdrawn that proposed extradition bill.
On the 4th of September, Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, withdrew the extradition bill.
Our foremost priority now is to end violence, to safeguard the rule of law, and to restore order and safety in society.
Carrie Lam gave in on the extradition bill. Why did you continue to go out to the streets? Why are you still continuing to go out to the streets?
The extradition bill was one of the requests. I mean, it was the only request back in June. But after so many events, after the brutality of the policemen and what we think and what the people of Hong Kong think about in terms of the system of Hong Kong, I mean, the formation of the system of the Hong Kong government, it's now become five demands.
The protesters still state the full withdrawal of the extradition bill as their first demand, but they now want an inquiry into police brutality, to no longer be described as rioters, an overhaul of Hong Kong's voting system, and for those who have been detained to be released and the charges against them dropped. Since this began, almost 2,500 have been arrested, of which 750 are children. And there has been sheer fury at the latest move by Carrie Lam's administration to invoke sweeping emergency powers, beginning with the ban of face masks, but with a fear that a curfew could be next. Is this about more than the five demands?
I think for the world it is, I think, is a fight against a brutal regime, in a sense. I mean, today is Hong Kong and tomorrow is going to be Taiwan or any other countries.
So it's a battle for the soul of Hong Kong?
I think so, yeah. And human rights and freedom.
You need to go back to 1997 to understand the depth of feeling among protesters. When Britain handed Hong Kong back to China, it was under what was known as One Country, Two Systems, in which Hong Kong kept an independent legal system, police force, and political administration. That autonomy from Beijing is meant to remain in place until 2047. What do you think of China's role in all of this?
Of course, Carrie Lam would deny anything about that she is a puppet of the Chinese government. But, I mean, you can see how what the government is doing to the people of Hong Kong is just reassemble of what the people of the government of China is doing to the minority groups. So I think the Chinese government is really behind this.
And are people scared of the power of China? Because ultimately, isn't it the Chinese government, in a way, that they're taking on?
Yeah, but I don't think people of Hong Kong are actually scared of the CCP now, because we don't have another way of moving on, because we have lost so much already. I mean, with the anti-mask law, this is the beginning of a dictatorship, isn't it? Because Carrie Lam can do whatever she wants now.
Invoke the power under the Emergency Regulations Ordinance and make a new regulation in the name of Prohibition on Face Covering Regulation, which is essentially an anti-mask law.
Something what impact has that mask ban had on the protests?
It adds more fuel to the fire, I would say. People are furious about the law.
Wearing masks by itself is also a personal freedom. So to ban this will just make Hong Kong people even more angry.
I mean, it's an extraordinary situation. People are protesting, as you say, before work, during the day, after work. People like yourselves going out twice a week. The government is responding to this by a very, very harsh crackdown against protesters. I mean, Carrie Lam has been heard in leaked audio saying she'd quit if she wasn't trying to serve two masters.
It's just unforgivable. If I have a choice, the first thing is to quit. Having made a deep apology is to step down.
How do you think months of protests have eroded Hong Kongers' faith in the government, but also in society?
I think the government, the people of Hong Kong don't have any kind of faith in the government and also in the system of how this government is being formed or elected or run, actually. So it's a total breakdown. Not even the government, even the police force. People are not going to believe in anything that the government is going to say or going to do in the future.
And this year we remember Tiananmen Square.
The troops have been firing indiscriminately, but still there are thousands of people on the streets who will not move back.
I mean, 30 years ago, people tried to rise up against the Chinese government and it was so violently quashed that the government has tried to bury that narrative ever since.
There was confusion and despair among those who could hardly credit that their own army was firing wildly at them.
Does that give you pause for thought?
No, not really. I think this is exactly the reason why we have to fight harder. Because 30 years ago, there wasn't internet, there wasn't press, there wasn't cameras. So nothing can be proved that the CCP is that brutal and that violent, that they act so brutally and violently on their own people, on their own next generation of people, on university students and anything. But now it's time to show the world how evil the CCP can be, or how evil the CCP has remained it to be. They try to do a lot of things in order to put a facade on their evil face. I mean, to say that the Chinese is different now. We are rich, and then we are educated, we do a lot of good things, but not at all. This is their true face.
This weekend, the Chinese president Xi Jinping warned that anyone attempting to split China would end in crushed bodies and shattered bones. The comments were made during a meeting with the Prime Minister of Nepal, but many have taken it as a chilling warning to protesters in Hong Kong. What should the international community be doing?
I would say that the people of Hong Kong, I mean, need everyone's help from the international community. I mean, to be honest, a lot of people are putting pressure on the government. For example, there are more congressmen who voice out their comments.
I'd like to speak directly to the people of Hong Kong. America stands with you, and America will always support you.
The NBA.
And the National Basketball Association, or NBA, in the U.S., is facing a huge backlash from U.S. lawmakers for its reaction to this tweet by the Houston Rockets general manager, a tweet backing pro-democracy demonstrations right here in Hong Kong.
And I heard similar things from the U.K. side. And to be honest, I think the U.K. government can do a lot of things, because the joint declaration is a joint declaration. And the UK, the British government has the right to declare that the joint declaration has been broke. And they may have the right to have Hong Kong back, or just to interfere with this current situation. I mean, Chris Patten actually said a lot of things for Hong Kong, but he was the last governor of Hong Kong, and I think, yeah, he's saying the right thing.
The joint declaration was a treaty signed by Britain and signed by China in good faith, and it goes on until 2047. It gives us every right to talk about what's happening in Hong Kong, to discuss it with China, to discuss it with the Hong Kong authorities. That is our right under international law.
I mean, you value it so much and you're fighting so hard for it that it has overtaken your life. I mean, this is a constant and regular thing to you. I mean, has it totally changed the way that you live your life?
For this couple of months, yes. Because you really can't get much sleep. You just want to check if anyone is hurt. You want to check out if your friends are okay. Because most of our friends are on the streets pretty much every night. And you're just constantly worried about your people, your family, and you worry about yourself. Because if you have been arrested or anything, then your parents would be worried. And my family talked to me for one day and just suddenly gave me a call and say, maybe we should just move to some other countries. Let's move the whole family to there. I mean,
do you want that?
It was touching. It wasn't what I wanted. I think this is my duty, just to try hard as I can in order to make Hong Kong a better place.
Thank you so, so much for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
We couldn't have made this episode without the help of journalist Verna Yu, who is based in Hong Kong. She's been writing for The Guardian. Do read her reports and those from other correspondents. We went to the Hong Kong government about this episode. A spokesman said, since China resumed the exercise of sovereignty over Hong Kong on July 1, 1997, the one country, two systems principle has been fully and successfully implemented. Human rights and freedom in Hong Kong are fully protected by the Basic Law, the Hong Kong Bill of Rights Ordinance, and other legislation. They added, on the anti-mass law, it was made because the situation in Hong Kong has clearly given rise to a state of serious public danger, with massed rioters, some of them students, vandalising government facilities, metro stations and shops, committing arson and hurling petrol bombs, as well as attacking police officers and people with different views. The objective of the regulation is to end violence and restore order. Coming up, Boris Johnson's Queen's Speech. Now, as trumpets rang out in Westminster on Monday, the Queen opened Parliament for her 65th time. But as The Guardian's Polly Toynbee explains, under the shadow of Brexit, this Queen's speech was more election promises than legislative agenda.
The Queen's speech is a great piece of theatre, of pageantry, that very rarely lives up to the great pomp and circumstance of the event. But in the end, it's pretty practical and down to earth. She gets out of a velvet bag her piece of goatskin vellum, takes 3 days for the ink to dry on it, and reads out a list of very mundane bills from the government of the day.
My ministers will continue to develop proposals to improve internet safety and will bring forward laws to implement new building safety standards.
This time was most peculiar because, of course, none of these bills will be enacted by this Parliament. The government has no majority, they have a minority, they are minus 45, and no chance of getting any of these bills through, or virtually none. So they are designed purely to be a showcase, a manifesto list for the next election, which everybody assumes is reasonably imminent. Boris Johnson has always presented himself as a liberal, compassionate Tory, but of course, in this Queen's speech, there is very tough on immigration, very tough on crime, very tough on extraditing people without even taking them to court. That's pretty standard, hard Tory stuff. I don't think Boris Johnson has a vision or an ideology of his own. He just takes a bit of this and a bit of that according to what the focus groups tell him people want. And we do know that Number 10 is now doing more focus grouping than has probably ever been done before. Perhaps a lot of these things will never be enacted, and perhaps Boris Johnson never wants them to be. It's hard to tell. But beyond that, overshadowing everything is the question of whether or not Brexit happens. The irony is that if it does happen, particularly if it's anything like the plan we've seen outlined so far, out of the customs union, out of the single market, this will lead to a huge deficit in the Treasury. It will mean many fewer tax receipts. It will mean a real drop in the state of the economy. As a result, he'll actually have much less money to spend on all these things he wants to give away. Here's the irony. If Boris wins, it'll be because he's succeeded in Brexit. If he succeeds in Brexit, he won't have any money to give away. Nobody ever knows quite what the relationship is between the Queen and any government, but I should think she's particularly sour about this one. After all, she was forced into proroguing the Parliament in a way that turned out to be illegal, which almost implicated her, or it got pretty damn close to it. So I imagine she regards Boris Johnson as the bounder that he is, who will do anything, disobey any law, when it suits him. But she always looks as if she's sucking lemons when she reads out these long speeches. My government will, she says, with a quaver in her voice as if she really wished they wouldn't.
That was Polly Toynbee. Do read her column. That's it for today. My thanks to Polly Toynbee, to the protester whose identity we are protecting, and to journalist Verna Yu. This episode was produced by Rachel Humphreys and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.